Half, a memoir of bodies and borders. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for an individual giving manager to support our fundraising team. You can learn more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Anjali Kamat, Safwat Nazal. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
State laws ban abortion for 1 in 3 women across the country. They are forced to remain pregnant or travel out of state for the care they need, depending how far they have to travel, whether they drive themselves or take other methods of transportation, how long they may have to stay, and countless other factors like lost wages or childcare, plus the cost of the medical care itself. The financial burden can be overwhelming, if not impossible to afford. To see each of their stories and to learn about the real cost of having to travel for abortion access, visit bandsoff.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, as well as 107.3 FM, and on the entire internet, WUSB.FM. You can listen to us anywhere. Time is just about 8 o'clock. I'm sorry, time is just about 6 o'clock. 1800 hours is what I meant to say. And that means, it being Tuesday night, time for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yep.
And it's another Tuesday evening. It's spring. Apparently that's here now. And we've got a lot to cover tonight, as we usually do. I guess I can't really postpone it any longer. This has been hanging over my head now for just about a year.
Oh, we're doing that?
Well, we said we were going to, didn't we? Last week, I made a promise. I said that this can of boiled peanuts that's been sitting here for a year, I don't know what's in it. It's got liquid of some sort. It's extremely heavy. And apparently this is what people down south like, because it's supposedly the South's favorite snack, according to the can. Now, Kyle, you've done some looking into this as to what exactly is involved.
Sure, tell yourself.
Well, somebody has to know something about this. There are two ways I can have this. And
I'm just fixing to get it over with.
Me too, believe me.
All right, get on with it.
Okay, so what do I do? What do I
pop the top, pull it back.
I just shook it. Does that matter?
Sure.
I don't want it to explode over my laptop. Okay, so I'm going to open this pop-top can. All right, and then what? I just reach my hand into whatever gooiness is inside? Yeah, I know. Why would you know? You've never seen this before, have you?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Would you like a utensil? I have a plastic knife here.
I'd like a rescue team on standby, but okay,
there's
fine.
There's also here. Why don't you take one of these just in case there's some
wow, that's a big towel you
gave
me.
Some brine.
All right.
It is brine.
We have serious things to talk about tonight, folks. No, it's not just about me trying some ridiculous snack.
I digress. Get on with this.
Not that the snack is ridiculous. I don't mean to offend people, but to me, it's something.
Yeah, right.
It's different. It's unusual. It's, all right. So it's boiled peanuts, the South's favorite snack, pop open and enjoy. I'm about to start. And Kyle, why are you leaving the room? Do you know something about this can that I don't? I'm opening it now. all right, everybody on the set, please be quiet so we can hear the sound of the can opening for the first and last time. Here we go. Well, that was anticlimactic. Okay, now I've got to stretch out a little bit so I can pull.
Yeah, don't cut yourself.
There. All right. It's
you see any peanuts?
I see what look like peanuts, but they could also be fingers. I don't know. It's in liquid. It looks really kind of disgusting.
Okay.
I'm gonna give it a whiff. All right.
Are you supposed to eat them whole or shell them?
Well, that's what you were supposed to look into. I
don't
know the
rules. Hold on. I'll check.
Yeah, please check. Please check. Okay. I'm gonna sniff this. Oddly, I don't smell anything. Okay. Boy, they. They don't look appealing. Let me just say it that way. I'm going to take a picture of this just so I can have some evidence at some point. Hang on. Just, yeah. Okay, I got a couple of shots there.
Boiled peanuts are typically eaten without the shell, so you'll have to shell and maybe put the shell aside.
These
on that
things
towel.
Are in the shell? Oh, my God, they're soaked. All right.
You crack the shell to get the soft peanut inside.
Just like a regular peanut, I would imagine. All right.
Some people enjoy eating the shell.
Some people enjoy a lot of things.
Softer shells if they are juicy and salty.
I just can't believe the can is finally open. All right. I'm just going to reach in and pull one out. All right. And see what happens.
I will not stop you. Ew.
Thank you, Kyle. That's really helpful. it feels like a regular, a little mushy, but it feels like a peanut. Looks like a peanut. So what, I'm just supposed to bite into this like I would a regular peanut shell and crack it with my teeth, or?
You're the explorer here.
Okay.
I like how I've been opted out of this entirely.
All right. Ooh, that's kind of briny. Kind of briny, and there are peanuts in there. All right. And peanuts are not crunchy. They're soggy. Ew. Oh, God. But, you know, I could see getting used to that a little bit. Ugh. Okay. There's a whole lot of these. And I've had one. Actually, I've had half of one. And I'm about done.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah.
Are you sure you don't want me to do the other method?
Well, why don't you describe what that would be?
Well, I was going to run down to the kitchen break room and basically throw it in a microwave.
Throw the tin can in the microwave?
No. Like I put some dishes that can handle that aside so that we could just like do half and I'll put the rest away in a cold environment.
Why would you put them away?
So that you can have them for breakfast.
Why
tomorrow.
Would I ever want to have these again? Okay. You know what? Okay, go ahead, do that. This is a show about experimentation.
So that's straight out of the can.
So take what's in the can. I had one. I had one. I did what I said I was going
to
do.
Do I have to have one?
You don't have to, but you can. I'd like to know your opinion. You have a good
pilot. I mean, I'm part of this whole thing. You don't spill it. I feel like we'll get letters if I don't participate.
You could have stopped me at that gas station down south from buying this. I don't know.
Okay, here's one that's like sort of broken already.
Yeah, well, you have to wonder how that happened. Yeah, it's kind of briny, right?
Okay, yeah.
Imagine eating peanuts in as if they were pickles.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's definitely like canned beans, but it's actually not bad. It's like briny. It's like salty.
I mean, if I was brought up on these, I probably would be used to them.
Okay. You know what I'm getting is like an olive flavor, but that's because it's brine and it's like a protein, but they're like fresh. So, okay. I got the, all right, let me go heat some. Okay. I'll be right back.
On behalf of olive growers, how dare you? They are not the same as olives. They just... or in a can with liquid. And all right. Thank you, folks, for bearing with us there. That's part one. We'll see what Kyle comes back with in a few minutes. All right. So yesterday was Election Day. Did you know that? Did you know yesterday was Election Day in Canada, our neighbors to the north? You know, those friendly people that we are being really nasty to for no particular reason. Well, yeah. Turns out Trump lost big time in Canada. So, you know, maybe we should take some notes. You know, they're showing us how to vote intelligently. And it really happened up there yesterday. I was watching the coverage and seeing how votes had changed over the course of years. And how various third parties, fourth parties, NDP and the Quebec Party and the Green Party, people voted for the Liberals and sacrificed their beliefs for those independent parties. And that was what we should have done in this country. We couldn't figure out how to do that. We had to say, oh, we disagree with Kamala Harris, so we're going to vote either not at all or vote for a third party or maybe even vote for Trump just to show our displeasure. And then we act all surprised and shocked when Trump wins. Now, in Canada, either they learned from our mistake or they already knew this, which I suspect the latter, and realized that if they vote strategically for the lesser of two evils, then they would get the lesser of two evils and they would not get the conservative who would be more aligned with the things that Trump says. Everybody got that. Well, not everybody, obviously, but many people did. And it was a mature thing to do. And as a result, there is a Liberal government that will take hold in Canada. There's one there right now, in fact. But a year ago, the Liberals were behind by like 20%, a ridiculous amount. With Justin Trudeau, there was no hope. And it was kind of scary. Because you didn't know who was going to take over, what kind of crazy policies they might implement. And imagine if the election had happened with Justin Trudeau a year ago and a conservative had come into power then. Well, what state would Canada be in now? Hopefully not the United States, but it would be likely a lot closer to something like that than what we're looking at today. So... it was an exciting night. It really was, if you were following it at all. And that Liberal victory yesterday, it energized other American allies that are under pressure from Trump. And, of course, Mark Carney, who is the current prime minister, the temporary prime minister, who now is the elected prime minister. There's now a spirit that people... can defeat the nonsense that we are spouting here in this country. So a good night in Canada. I think a good night for democracy. And Kyle is back. Oh my God, Kyle. That looks disgusting.
No, keep going. This has to cool down just a little bit. It's very hot.
It looks like gruel, except with peanuts.
No, it's hot peanuts.
Yeah, who ever asked for this? All right, so would you put this in the microwave?
Yeah.
All right.
It's funny because I was down in the break room. They're actually taking bets on who would gag. Yeah, very, they have the radio.
I already gagged, so you know, collect down there. But you're going to get a note if that thing left an odor. Believe me.
I know.
Remember the fish incident.
I know. Right. That was crazy. I can't believe someone would put haddock in the microwave.
Okay, how else do you get haddock to be hot? All right. I don't think there was... all right, we're not going to relitigate that.
Hot haddock.
So today, in addition to being the day after Election Day in Canada, it's the 100th day of Trump's second term. And everybody is falling over themselves to put forth their opinions and their feelings as to how things are going. And according to this NPR piece, more people are giving Trump an F than any other grade for the first 100 days. That's according to a poll. Twice as many people said Trump deserves a grade of F than a grade of A for how he's handled his first 100 days in office. 45% said Trump deserves a failing mark compared to 23% who would pass him with flying colors. Yeah. The poll of 1,439 adults, which was conducted from the 21st to 23rd of April, found Trump's political standing in decline since he was sworn in for a second term. It's driven by views of how he's handling the economy and tariffs, but a slim majority now also disapproves of how he's handling immigration, which had been a relative strength. His overall approval rating is down to 42%, and that includes just 36% among independents. Now, for context, when looking at Gallup's numbers back to Harry Truman, this would be the second worst approval rating for any president at the 100-day mark in those 80 years. Do I guess who the lowest was?
I think I heard this earlier, so I'd be like cheating.
Oh, go ahead.
Hoover?
No. See, you're wrong.
Oh, okay.
Feel better? No, Trump again. The first term Trump was actually a point lower. He's catching up. His economic numbers are even worse. Just 39% approve of how Trump is handling the economy. His worst score ever, including during his first term. Nearly two-thirds believe grocery prices will go up. Almost 6 in 10 said placing tariffs on imports from other countries hurt the U.S. economy. And a strong majority said Trump bears responsibility for the current economic situation, and it is not the result of an economy he inherited. So, yeah, it's not exactly a good report card here. It's pretty bad. Pretty bad. I haven't heard any comments from him, but I'm sure he's going to call the people that the Gallup people a bunch of communists or something, that, and it's a fake poll or whatever, and then he'll sue them and the usual nonsense. But that is what people are saying, that we are not in good shape. You know, I've been hearing all kinds of disturbing views about just observations. For instance, and you'd be interested in this, Kyle, the Port of Seattle supposedly is it's like ghostland. You know, there's nothing going on because ships from China are not docking there, you know, and this is going to hit our economy fairly soon. Empty shelves.
I'm partly kind of overjoyed, and I'm only gonna say that to a small degree and with a huge caveat, because it means there's probably a lot less truck traffic in the metropolitan area of downtown and near the ports there, which in turn I think makes for a better city, but probably not at all for better economics and, of course, retail. I mean, people won't have a reason to be there if they're aiming to shop, but there's nothing to shop for. So I get that it's a partial joy, only because just to see that, I'm sure it might be on some level refreshing. Let's put it that way. But it is a hallmark of bad management of the whole situation. I'm also wondering what Port of Tacoma is like, because Tacoma, in fact, is a much larger port. And I thought, well, let's see, this might be dated, but it's second only to Long Beach on the West Coast, Long Beach in California, as the number one busiest port. So Port of Tacoma may also be suffering the same kind of situation, perhaps on a larger scale, because they are a relatively much more massive than Port of Seattle, although probably marginally. I don't know exactly. Can I add any more qualifiers to all of that?
Well,
I'm just saying the other major ports in Washington are probably also experiencing similar shortfalls in the amount of cargo traffic, because they're all probably used to accepting stuff from Asia and China principally.
Well, you know, you're going to see a difference in any city that might be pleasant. You know, less cars, cleaner air. I don't think that's what Trump was going for, though. I don't think that's anything that he wanted. And the fact that, you know, everything is nice and quiet and there's not much economic activity that we're looking forward to, I have to say, I think that probably is their worst nightmare. So, you know, I look forward to seeing it play out and see how they're affected by it. And maybe when people realize what a disaster this is, they'll take the action needed to change and basically turn in the right direction. Because, boy, this is not the right direction we are heading in. Making enemies of the entire world, raising prices so that nobody can afford anything. No, it's one for the books.
Yeah, anybody that voted for this that is now out of work or idle as a result of not having anything to haul with their truck or otherwise keep them occupied was probably having a pretty clear-eyed moment of self-reflection, I would hope, because that's terrible for their livelihood and their families and all of us generally. I mean, for the most part, you can't make so drastic a change without having consequence.
And, you know, those consequences, boy, they're in so many areas. Trump has accused trading partners of ripping off the U.S. for decades. He set in motion a sweeping tariffs policy that has roiled financial markets, weakened the dollar, triggered warnings of a slowdown in worldwide economic output, increased risk of recession. And yet he calls the tariffs necessary medicine. But his objectives remain unclear, even as his administration works to negotiate separate deals with dozens of countries. You know, I love how he's saying that we're working something out with China. And China is saying, no, you're not. Nobody's talking to you. It's really almost funny. And of course, you know, what's going on with Ukraine, how he basically is turning things around so that Ukraine is now the problem instead of the freedom-fighting country that is standing up to Putin.
Well, it's actually come all the way full circle, because in his actions, that's absolutely true. But he's now even, I think, starting to make sounds that are a little bit, let's say, close to what they should be as far as standing with Western countries and the alliance that's been around Ukraine. He's, I think, chastised or observed that Putin does not seem to be willing to make the kinds of concessions that are part of a serious peace plan. That kind of stuff, that I want to say it's a good sign, but I absolutely do not trust this man, Trump.
Which one?
Either. Like, he could make those sounds, but I can't believe that in sincerity, that it's anything more than to help his own ego and optics.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Like, if he was sincere about this, I mean, I guess he met with Zelensky at the Pope's funeral.
Yes.
Did you already mention that?
No, I didn't. There was
an interesting photo of them.
Yeah, and I'm sure it was all about the photo. And it wasn't a planned meeting, and Trump, in fact, even asked for it.
Exactly.
So, you know, I was saying that's potentially a good thing, but, you know, then he's saying things like, you know, I'm beginning to think that Putin doesn't really want peace. Maybe he's playing me. Yeah, you think? You know, we've been saying that for literally years, that you're in his pocket, and you know, he's manipulating you, and you're too thick to see that, and you're willing to sacrifice an entire country just to I don't know, save some face. So it's just sad to see the slow motion mechanism in his brain finally latching on to what's actually going on. And, you know, I wonder what is going to become of Ukraine as a result of his idiocy. You know, to say, and you know, I'm seeing a number of people in his administration say this, that Ukraine is going to have to give up something for peace. And, oh, you know, in a war, that's what happens. I get it, you know. Compromise. But what is the compromise that Russia will be making? You know, that's a simple question. So, you know, you expect Ukraine to make a compromise, fine, give up something. What does Russia give up? And the answer, if you can believe this, the answer is they will stop fighting. That's what they're giving up. The constant fighting, because apparently that's what Russia exists for, is just for fighting. So Ukraine gives up valuable territory and Russia stops fighting. Oh yeah, that sounds fair. And do you honestly think after that happens that that will be the end of it? It's insane. It's insane. You know, okay, here's just off the top of my head, just completely right now, you know, thinking of this, I bet I have a better solution. Okay, you want to make a compromise? You want Russia to keep the territory it has seized? Not a good precedent to invade a country and be given the land that you take over. But let's say we decide, okay, we can live with that. In exchange, we have Ukraine become a part of NATO and become a part of the EU, and a guarantee that Russia will never do this again. Is everybody unhappy? Good, because that is a good compromise when everybody is unhappy. But it's a hell of a lot better than what they're saying right now, which is basically, Ukraine, you lose some stuff. Russia, congratulations. Try not to invade one of our places. It's so ridiculous. Okay, enough about that. You heard about this judge in Wisconsin. This is disturbing. This is really disturbing. A Milwaukee judge was arrested by FBI agents and accused of obstructing justice by directing an undocumented immigrant out of her courtroom through a side door while federal immigration agents waited in a hallway to arrest him. There is so much wrong with that sentence right there. A courtroom is not the place where you ambush people and arrest them. You know, because if you do that, people don't show up for their court dates. And the court system is no longer seen as trustworthy. Now, of course, you know, you can predict what's happened. Condemnation from Democratic leaders, protests in Milwaukee. But Pam Bondi, oh boy, that U.S. Attorney General, defended the move, saying that Judge Hannah Dugan, her arrest sent a strong message to judges that the Trump administration will prosecute them if they obstruct justice by escorting a criminal defendant out a back door. And after the arrest, this is priceless, the FBI director, Kash Patel, posted a photo of her in handcuffs on Twitter and said, "No one is above the law." And that led to the phrase, "Except Trump," trending on Twitter all day long. Okay. Now, I don't claim to be an expert on this or really anything, but it's my view that if you have a defendant in your courtroom, that's your courtroom. What you say goes. And this defendant was in there facing charges from battery charges, some kind of altercation. And those charges were in her courtroom. She was the one deciding what happens to this guy. She could have dropped the charges. A judge can do that. You know, a judge can drop charges anytime. They have the ultimate say. So, in my view, a judge does not have to listen to people sitting out in the hallway saying, "Hey, we want to grab that guy as soon as you're finished with him." It's nice, yeah, good luck with that, but she doesn't work for ICE. And that's something I think we all need to remember. We do not work for ICE. We do not have to help them. We do not have to cooperate. And in fact, in many instances, impeding their progress is probably the most patriotic thing you can do. Have you seen some of the things that these people have done to folks who have not committed any crimes other than, of course, being here? See, that's how they get around it. They say, "Oh, we're only going to go after the criminals." Yeah, we're just going to arrest the criminals. but everyone here is a criminal. If you're here and you're undocumented, you're a criminal. So we're going to arrest them as well. Sending U.S. citizens to El Salvador, sending children, toddlers who were born in this country. These people have no conscience at all. You do not have to help them. And anything you can do to impede their progress, I think, is a good thing. Now, I'm not talking about people who are a danger to society. Of course not. Nobody is. But they've made that distinction awfully difficult by just going after everybody. And this particular case, now you're arresting judges because they don't deliver people into your arms? No. No, that is not how this country works. I mean, why? First of all, they arrested the guy almost immediately when he went out the side door. So take the win. Why are you pushing this? Because they want to send a message. They want to send a message to judges saying, you are not safe if you do not obey us. And that is scary. That is damn scary. So regardless of how you feel about the defendant here, about the judge, about ICE, that kind of a thing, it's really pretty unprecedented. And it goes to show the steps that they will take to put fear into people's heads. And there was a lot of fear out there. People are extremely afraid to show up in public, to show their faces anywhere where they might be seen. You know, and the specter of ICE lurking around the corner, it's something. It affects people that I know who were born here. they feel they're not safe just because they might have a relative, or, you know, they might say something that will rub this administration the wrong way. Well, we can't live like that. We can't live in that kind of fear. So, yeah, don't listen to people who say you have to do what you're told. Think first about what you're being told to do and act according to your conscience. You okay, Kyle?
Would you like to have a warm boiled peanut?
Yeah, you said while I was saying
this
all
might
that
make you feel better.
You were diving into the bowl of warm boiled peanuts. Well, first of all, when you say boiled, when are they boiled? We didn't boil them.
They were boiled when they were canned.
Okay, and that makes them.
Sorry, I'm clanging around a spoon. I know you can hear it.
Yeah, no, that's
I'm trying to be sanitary with it. It's very hard to eat on the radio.
It really is.
Radio was not intended to be like a place where you just chow down.
If we were in the main studio, we get a stern lecture after the show about eating, you know, on top of the console.
Yeah, it's like completely verboten. Right. You don't do that. You don't drink all kinds of smoothies and concoctions. But right. Speaking of that, I was wondering if anyone makes like boiled peanut cocktail. Like, I feel like this would be a boiled peanut martini. Does that exist?
I'm sure somebody's come
Please
up with that.
Write us if you have a mocktail. If you don't drink, that's fine. If you have a recipe for a mocktail that incorporates boiled peanuts, please let us know. I don't know what's wrong with you, but that's fine. Also, if you actually imbibe, and you have a recipe for a martini, a dirty boiled peanut martini or something, please let us know. We'd love to have your recipe and also what's wrong with you. Here. E, let me hand you these.
Good God.
Can I just hand you the whole bowl right over your machine?
Be careful.
Yeah. Just put it right on the laptop.
Is this a hot bowl? Is this a hot bowl? Am I going to burn my hands?
Okay, you know what? You know, I got a better idea. I will walk around that way while you're talking.
Put that over here.
I'm still eating my second boiled peanut.
Why are the peanuts still in shells? Why couldn't they do this with the peanuts not in the shells? Just put it on the table.
I don't know.
Don't hand it to me. I'm not going to take it up. Right, okay.
So, yeah, just run your finger in there.
Oh, yeah, that is hot.
Yeah, it's warm. It's not as boiling hot as it came out of the microwave. I put it in the microwave for a minute and 40 seconds. It's
about
half a can.
I'm just going to take one of these warm ones.
I put some brine and like half the can of peanuts. 1 minute, 40 seconds.
I like the brine.
It's nice. It's nice salty. That's why I'm thinking maybe it would go good, pair well while making some sort of savory drink.
Maybe.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, he's now devouring the entire...
I'm just trying to get the peanut out of the shell.
Yeah, they get stuck. Okay, he's completed.
When you eat dry peanuts, they fall out. He's completed. And this, you have to pull it out with your teeth.
All right, he's now wiping his face.
Because I'm done.
And now he's put down the towel.
Yeah, that's...
And the shell is now down.
You know, it's I can stomach one or two of them, but not a whole can. And I don't know, could we donate this to raccoons or something, or to charity, or to enemies, or... Wow.
I think you have one every hour until they're gone.
Avoid Deep South gas stations, folks, in the middle of the night when you've been driving for hours. You might make bad decisions.
There, we did it. I feel this has been a success.
All right.
Boiled peanuts. We'll have to find other somewhat taboo things to try on the air. Actually, no, we shouldn't make this a regular.
I don't really want that to happen. No.
This was an accident. It was from a trip. Everyone was with us back then listening.
The important thing is I now have my hammering hand back. That's where the can was. I couldn't bang my fist on the table. Now I can do that again.
Yeah, it's kind of the mic stand. That's why it sounds like that.
Yeah, it's a good sound.
Okay. All right. The can's gone.
All right.
Let's move on.
You want to hear a listener letter?
I do. You know, I heard there was some really, really, really good letters. And we often hear, like, from people that want to have a bone to pick. You know, they want to, like, you know, open up something that we brought up, which we welcome. We love it. You know, if you have a differing opinion, a view that we hadn't considered, we'd love to hear that. otw@2600.com is the email address. But every so often we get really enthusiastic emails. I'm wondering, is that one of the ones in your pile?
This one is, I'd say it's pretty enthusiastic. It's entitled Thank You, Emmanuel and Kyle, which is always a good start. I mean it sincerely when I say you are one of the only hours of the week where I feel like it's an escape back to the train episodes last summer. Your steady demeanor and view of both sides helps keep me calm compared to the last time we went through whatever this is. by simply knowing I am not alone, calm clarity is allowing me to function. I recently went into the city and was surprised by the vibrancy when I grabbed a sandwich and some recommendations for a place in Chicago, which we're not going to say on the air because it could be seen as a promotion, but we do intend to go there next time we're in Chicago. There is still hope. It just appears in the most ordinary spaces. I think it's vital we remind ourselves that at the end of the day, we are unified as human beings, and we all love a good sandwich. So thank you for the free weekly therapy. One love, SW. And thank you, SW, for that beautiful letter. And glad we could help. Glad we could be there. Glad we can, you know, be that steady voice. But know that, you know, we're also looking for that ourselves. And letters like that help us. It's all one big community.
Yeah, it is reaffirming, at least in the day-to-day sense, because we too feel some of the pressure and the disillusionment, pick your adjective, but the acknowledgement really is an unexpected boost for us and for many of the other listeners who might feel the same way. And yeah, we're not experts. Like, I say this a lot. I mean, I'm here. I have the opportunity to speak my mind. We don't have a script. I don't research even as much as you do with stories. I'm just here as a person, and I have my own worldview, my own upbringing, my own perspective. And I don't share all of that, but it is who I am. And when I do share an opinion about something, know that it's coming from my very fixed and unique vantage, which may be incorrect and may be, you know, the opposite of what your experience has been. I'm just here providing that as a non-expert, and your contributions when we take telephone calls or if you write us, your contributions are just as valid, and how you feel, even if it's disagreement, is completely valid unless it's really, really just wrong from consensus. But that's not something we're going to judge on the air anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And if you want to write a letter to us, please feel free. OTW at 2600.com. That's OTW for off the wall at 2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, you know, remember last week we were talking about those Stony Brook students whose immigration status was terminated by the federal government, and how it was really a good thing to see the university here standing up for them and supporting them and not acting like, say, Columbia University and saying, get off campus now, and, you know, ugly things like that. Well, I'm happy to say that all 11 of those students have had their immigration status reinstated. That's according to the university's executive vice president and provost, Carl Lejuge. He announced that in a letter to the community yesterday. The university's Office of Global Affairs team has been in contact with the affected students, and the change means on-campus employment can be restored, allowing the students to return their full attention to their academic pursuits. And that's a good end. I don't know why it happened. I guess pressure does have some effect on the Trump administration. But to simply target people because they're from a different place or because they express an opinion or do something that does not hurt anybody, that's something that needs to be challenged. And I'm glad to see it was. I'm glad to see it worked out. Now, there was another issue that we expressed some support for the university, and that was, of course, the showing of the Academy Award-winning documentary, No Other Land, which was a co-production of Palestinian and Israeli filmmakers about the destruction of a community on the West Bank by Israeli soldiers. And Kyle and I saw that a few weeks ago. It's very, very hard to see in this country. It's in fact, practically impossible unless you can find a theater or a pirate that can give you a copy on the internet. And so that's why I was so incredibly proud to know that Stony Brook was showing it. It was being shown last Wednesday. And Kyle, you don't know of this yet, but it turns out it was not shown last Wednesday. According to this Stony Brook Press article, which I happened upon just a couple of days ago, Stony Brook University faculty and community members were set to screen the Palestinian documentary No Other Land on April 23rd in the Engineering Building. Actually, you know what? I'm not even sure about this story. Okay, you know what? I've got this wrong because of the way it was written. I got kind of confused here. It was canceled. It was canceled because it was supposed to be shown in the Wang Theater that day. But it was shown in the Engineering Building. According to this story, it's very confusing because I see people saying it got canceled. I see people saying it didn't get canceled. But now, reading this a little bit more carefully, I see that it was originally scheduled to play in the Wang Theater. And the provost, the same guy, in fact, we just quoted, Carl Lejuge, he told organizers to reschedule the screening. Why? Because it fell on the same day as the Israeli Holocaust Remembrance Day, known as Yom HaShoah, and a few days after the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising anniversary. Okay, that right there is ridiculous, that you can't show a film in a particular building because it coincides with a holiday that has nothing to do with the subject matter. You know, I mean, are you saying that any time a country or a government is accused of some kind of human rights violation, you can't document that on a day that's a holiday under that regime? That's nuts. That, and it's also insulting, because you're saying that that's part of Jewish culture, is a genocide against other people, and destroying communities, and being bullies. These are the things that No Other Land documents, and documents quite well. They won the Academy Award, for God's sake. You should be able to see that film any day you want, in a public place, in a private place. And to say, no, not on this day because it might offend somebody who has nothing to do with any of this, and it might offend the people who do have something to do with this, it's not related to the subject matter. So I hope that the film was shown on the Engineering Building. Maybe somebody can write to us and verify that in fact did happen. I mean, it doesn't really make a difference to me what building it's shown in, but these kinds of restrictions, these kinds of assumptions about subject matter, they really can be troublesome. They really can be. It shows you the challenge of simply showing a documentary, you know, that has been so widely heralded. And hopefully people saw it. Please write to us if you did, otw@2600.com. Do you have any thoughts, Kyle?
Well, just I think is some kind of logic that we're all expected to get on board with, that like Israel is special and we have to have all these special considerations and special understandings, which, like you said, is really offensive.
Yeah.
Because it's insulting to our intelligence that we can't understand that they're separate in a myriad of ways, as far as what you might be remembering one day versus a contemporary conflict between an occupied area and a nation state or theocracy or whatever you want to call it.
Now, Sternberg officials told the Sternberg Press there was no request to cancel the showing of this film. We worked with organizers to review plans for when and where it will be shown. Azar and Manisha Desai, who are professor and executive director for the Center for Changing Systems of Power, that's a great name for a department there, had already booked the venue, published the flyer to promote the event, and had more than 100 students registered to attend when the provost asked them to reschedule. Desai said faculty organizers were not aware of the coinciding dates when they planned the event. And I challenge anyone out there to say, oh yeah, that's when Yom HaShoah is. You know, I know people know, but not everybody does. And I would bet the majority of people in this country do not know when that day was. April 23rd, fine. The request to reschedule was impinging on academic freedom in their view. When Professor Azar was able to get this film, we thought this would be a good opportunity for students on our campus to see what's going on in Palestine. There are lots of people in the community who are very glad that we are showing it for free because it has not had wide distribution. We were informed by Provost Carl Lejeune that he had decided, based on what he had heard, that some people would feel uncomfortable because it marks the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which is when Jews in Warsaw rose against Nazi repression, and that he had heard criticism of the film from both sides. And Desai later said, I don't know what he meant by both sides. I don't either. Both sides of horrible injustice. And so he has decided that it cannot be shown on this day, that it needed to be rescheduled, particularly in Wang Theater. And again, you know, it's not clear here if it actually was shown in the engineering building last Wednesday. So please let us know if you were there, if you saw it. But if you haven't seen the film, by all means, figure out a way to get it. I can't help you any more than that. It has no distribution in this country. You can see it overseas, no problem, except good luck getting streaming to work. You have to pay for it, but it won't work if you're using an American credit card. They really have made it so it's almost impossible for Americans to see this. And I know it's not hard for you to resort to piracy and see it that way. It shouldn't have to be. Shouldn't have to be. Now, while we're on the subject of Israeli injustice and, you know, just some of the nightmares that are going on, this incident that happened in Brooklyn, my God, a Brooklyn woman was chased, kicked, spit at, pelted with objects by a mob of Orthodox Jewish men who mistook her as a participant in a protest against Israel's far-right security minister. This from the Associated Press. Okay, you know, I want you to think about that sentence for a second. You know, they chased, kicked, spit at, pelted her with objects. And I can't even repeat some of the things they were saying to her. And all this because they mistook her for somebody protesting against Israel's far-right security minister. As if that somehow would justify it. You know, if you were, in fact, a protester against some guy from another country who is super far-right and thinks of Palestinians as less than human, you're protesting that, yeah, you deserve to be chased and beaten. Whew. You know, look at the coverage of this, and you'll see a similar type of tone, where basically, you know, they're not saying it outright, but it's kind of implied that, yeah, this was a mistake. You know, she wasn't actually protesting. No, this was a crime, and those people need to be found and prosecuted, as any civilized person would agree, including members of all communities in Brooklyn. And that's something that I know the media doesn't want to ever focus upon, is how people agree. People from different backgrounds, they support each other. Hey, look at the film. Look at the film we were just talking about, No Other Land. And you'll see how Israeli filmmakers come into this town that's being destroyed by Israeli soldiers. And while, you know, there's a degree of suspicion, it's not outright hostility. And there is some welcoming. There is some community there too. And that to me is inspirational. Anyway, the assault in Brooklyn was recorded by a bystander, unfolded on Thursday near the global headquarters of the Shabbat Lubavitch movement in Crown Heights, where an appearance by Itamar Ben-Gvir set off clashes between pro-Palestinian activists and members of the neighborhood's large Orthodox Jewish community. Now, the woman is a neighborhood resident in her 30s. She told the Associated Press that she learned of the protest after hearing police helicopters over her apartment. She walked over to investigate around 10:30 p.m., but by then the protest had mostly dispersed, not wanting to be filmed. She committed the ultimate offense. You know what that is, Kyle? She covered her face with a scarf. And if you do that, well, as soon as I pulled up my scarf, a group of 100 men came over immediately and encircled me. Now, she is too terrified to even give out her name because she still fears for her safety. They were shouting at me, threatening to rape me, chanting death to Arabs. I thought the police would protect me from the mob, but they did nothing to intervene. Reminds me of the UCLA attack. How many of you remember the UCLA attack? We talked about it on this show a year ago. That's where there was a pro-Palestinian demonstration at UCLA that was attacked by a mob of people while the police stood by. You could see them. They didn't do anything for over an hour. For over an hour. You probably didn't hear about it in the media. You probably didn't hear a thing. But if you were watching a live feed, you saw it all happen. Anyway, as the chants grew in intensity, a lone police officer tried to escort her to safety. One police officer. They were followed for blocks by hundreds of men and boys jeering in Hebrew and English. Video shows two of the men kicking her in the back, another hurling a traffic cone into her head, a fourth pushing a trash can into her. "This is America," one of the men can be heard saying. "We've got Israel. We've got an army now." At one point, she and the police officer were nearly cornered against a building. "I felt sheer terror," she said. "I realized at that point I couldn't lead this mob of men to my home. I had nowhere to go. I didn't know what to do. I was just terrified." After several blocks, the officer hustled the woman into a police vehicle, prompting one man to yell, "Get her!" The crowd erupted in cheers as she was driven away. The woman is a lifelong New Yorker. She was left with bruises, mentally shaken by the episode, which she said police should investigate as an act of hate. "I'm afraid to move around the neighborhood where I've lived for a decade," she said. "It doesn't seem like anyone in any position of power really cares." And look around. See how many headlines this is evoking. You know, imagine if the tables were turned, and this was a crowd of pro-Palestinian demonstrators chasing someone that they thought was Israeli or Jewish. The outrage we'd rightfully feel for this. So we have to be fair, and we have to point out when there's injustice, no matter what side it's coming from. And you could not get a more clear example here.
Yeah, even the hypothetical would have people concerned or offended. the double standard is galling.
Well, the spokesman for the Shabbat Lubavitch, Rabbi Mati Seligson, denounced both the protesters and the mob. I don't know what the protesters did other than protest, but if they did something worthy of being denounced, fine. But let's see what that is, because we sure saw what this is, and we sure saw that this needs to be condemned and prevented. He said the violent provocateurs who called for the genocide of Jews in support of terrorists and terrorism outside a synagogue in a Jewish neighborhood where some of the worst anti-Semitic violence in American history was perpetrated and where many residents share deep bonds with the victims of October 7th did so in order to intimidate, provoke, and instill fear. All right, if that in fact happened, then I agree. But right now, all I see is a statement. And to the other point, we condemn the crude language and violence of the small breakaway group of young people. Such actions are entirely unacceptable and wholly antithetical to the Torah's values. The fact that a possibly uninvolved bystander got pulled into the melee further underscores the point. You know, there's a few things here that kind of bug me. I'm trying to minimize it. You know, a small group? It's over 100 people. It's not a small group. That's a mob. All right? And the fact that an uninvolved bystander got pulled into the melee, that's unacceptable? Well, what if it was an involved protester? Somebody who had a picket sign? That's okay with you? You know, you have to look for these little coded messages here that say, yeah, make sure you beat up the right people.
It's framing. It's media framing.
It sure is.
It's the way it's written. But yeah, super fun, super chill, sympathetic, relatable people. Definitely want to hang with them. I mean, Ben Gavir, really? That guy's a real sweetheart.
Hey, we're out of time. Let me just, you know, a couple of stories. Israel's been blocking food from Gaza for 60 days now. Food for civilians. And they're doing that to pressure Hamas into giving up hostages. It's not working. And they're starving civilians who had nothing to do with October 7th or taking hostages. It's barbaric. Needs to stop. And today, Israel launched an airstrike on Beirut. I don't even know if they have a reason. They say they're trying to get Hezbollah out of there. But again, they're bombing civilian areas. And apparently, that's all nice and normal now. It doesn't even make the papers.
Yeah, and this has our nation's blessings. This is our proxy there. This is their doing. This is our weaponry. And they have our blessings. So that's what we're doing here.
All right.
Own it, people.
We're out of time. Stand up for what you believe in. Don't be afraid. Write to us, otw@2600.com. And keep listening to WUSB. Pledge your support at wusb.fm. We'll see you next week.
Enjoy your boiled peanuts. I'll see you.